All right, we're back. Weekends episode 16. Famous 16s, who we got?
The only one I really knew was Pau Gasol, just because I was a lifelong Lakers fan. I would say that during the Pau Kobe years, I literally watched like 82 games per year, like every regular season game. It was like crazy fandom. But then I went and looked it up and I saw Joe Montana is also number 16, top five all time. And a guy named Bobby Hull, who a lot of people won't know. He's a super OG NHL guy. But my uncle, his name is Paul Curtis. He actually played in the NHL. He played for like a couple years back when. He was like a brawler. He wasn't like that great, but he was known for just like being the guy who'd go out there and like teach other dudes a lesson, kind of like an enforcer. But his idol was Bobby Hull. And so like growing up, that side of the family, they're from Canada. I'm half Canadian. And they were just like diehard hockey guys. And like Bobby Hull was like the one that they revered. Bobby Hull, Bobby Orr, those a lot of these old school guys. And so that was a little trip down memory lane when I saw Bobby Hull's name.
That's dope. I'm looking at the list. Yeah. I mean, we're getting into number territory where it's going to be slim pickings for a while. 16s, yeah. tough to find. I didn't see anybody else on the list that like super jumped out. Tyler Lockett, but that's we're really scraping the barrel to try to get name recognition. So yeah, we'll keep everyone updated. I do think between 17 and 20, there's probably some football players that we'll have, which is good.
Yeah, 20 is going to be a pop-in, actually. There's a lot of 20s in the NBA, a lot of cornerback secondary in football, so I think we'll be good. But yeah. Soccer players will be much, much fewer, less, and less and less.
So. Yeah, dope. All right, another episode, long list of topics. A lot of interesting stuff going on. A lot of ways we can take it. What's piquing your interest most?
Let's talk about this AI TikTok video leveraging TikTok shop play. And the reason why is because both of us, we're like really, really big on trends. I think like staying on top of trends is one of the ways to kind of like dominate on the internet or like do well on the internet. But I think we also both agree that attaching yourself too hard to a trend is a trap. And so when it comes to TikTok videos, I'll frame it and then I'd love to get your opinion. But basically, I was just scrolling through TikTok and I went down this rabbit hole. I saw these AI, purely AI generated videos, meaning the script is more than likely generated by ChatGPT. All the visuals are generated by ChatGPT or otherwise. These ones didn't look like Midjourney. They look more ChatGPT. There is some man hours where they throw it in a cap cut and do like some basic transitions, et cetera. This will also be soon automated all by AI. 11 Labs generating the voice and then the captions probably by whatever caption app that they're using, one of the millions. And then what they're doing is they're identifying products from the TikTok shop. A lot of the ones that I was looking at in the rabbit hole that I fell into, it was deep. Like you could scroll for infinite amount of times and just discover new things. But it was like the one that I saw was like a lion's mane product. And there's a lot of like supplements and there's proteins, creatines, et cetera. And like, I think these are where a lot of the bread and butter is. But basically the hard work was really figuring out an emotional hook. So something to drive you in, some sort of storytelling hook that really like speaks to you. Like, do you feel fatigued all of the time? It's probably because you're missing this one thing. Not a lot of people know about it. This was like a variation of most of the hooks. And then the rest of it was kind of filler ChatGPT. They'd show a product, everything AI generated. And then I went to, there's a site called Callow Data where you can kind of track a lot of this data to see how much that they were making by estimate, but I think it's relatively accurate. Some of these accounts, like they're making 3, 4, 5, 6K a day, like consistently. And it's a volume play. And shit, you're not, like most of it is kids. Goes back to our theory where like, if you're young on the internet, you have less of an excuse not making money on the internet than when you're like older. But I would presume that most of these are kids and it's a complete volume play. You go to their pages, there's like 20 videos per day and they're just hoping one or two pump. And that's all they need to bring in like crazy amounts of money. And so I was looking at this. Of course, your one algorithm change away from becoming obsolete. This is completely arbitrage. In the next few months, everybody's gonna catch on to this and start doing it, and then it just becomes diminishing returns and ineffectiveness, blah blah blah, whatever. But it adds credence to the idea on the internet. There's always an arbitrage trend play that you could just make crazy money from, and if that's what you want to do. I personally think it's exhausting. It's kind of like a losing formula in the long term. But if that's what you want to do, you can always, get ahead of these trends and just play the arbitrage game forever. But I wanted to hear your thoughts on the TikTok shop opportunity, especially with AI generated content.
Yeah. The beauty of what they're doing is it's so low burn. Like, because they're affiliates, they're not even manufacturing the products. And so they literally can just do it themselves, or like 2-3 people in a warehouse with no salary, or like live in your mom's basement. The tools to do it are almost free. And so if the meta changes, or if the algorithm changes, they're still fine. Like, they'll be like, they took no risk, which is, yep. I mean, they took a brand risk, but they took no like business financial capital risk.
Not even a brand risk, because there's no, like, you're not losing trust. You don't care. Like, it's just an algorithm play. You're not actually building like trust over time. It's just strictly a slot machine play.
I more mean like as a person, like if you did this under your name, like your personal brand, people, like you were saying before, people would know you as like, oh, you're the guy that spams Lion's Mane.
Correct.
Which, like, that, but that's the only con. If you did it under an anonymous account or like a branded account, there's literally no risk at all. But this is so, okay, this funnels into this broader theme, which every 3 or 4 months when I'm like feeling bad about myself, when I have that like lull, that like day or two lull where I'm like, I get that like mental lapse of weakness, I'll look on like Twitter and stuff, and you see like all the dudes with the Lambos and like the, oh, we're selling core, we're making 200,000 a month, whatever. A lot of that is fake, but there are people, like, this is a testament. The TikTok shop example is a testament. There are plenty of these other fads where like there are kids that are 21 years old making $150,000 a month, like for real, real money. They have Lambos that they bought stupidly, but they bought, or whatever it is. And it always makes me wonder, like, I can share my strategy on why I haven't gone down that path, but it makes me wonder, like, are we just overthinking in the midwit meme? Are we just in the middle being like, oh, we have to do it the right way and like pure and whatever. And like, really the answer to win, if you're looking for just like money quickly, is this. And I always, sometimes I have these lapses where I don't go down the path of actually actioning against one of these trends, but I'm like, oh man, there is something here that like people are using. To give you my quick perspective, then I want to hear yours. My thinking is always like, it's comparing working a job versus owning your own business. When you work a job, you're basically trading your time for money for a period. And when you leave that job, you have nothing to take with you other than the money if you've saved. Like, you have no, there's no asset that you've compounded other than a skill, I guess, if you learned a hard skill. But like, let's just assume you didn't learn, you plateaued with your skill learning. You have some money saved, but you really are starting from scratch. I view this as the same, right? Where if you do drop shipping for 9 months and you like are able to extract 250K, when you then leave, or when the fad dies out, or like when you get bored and you start from scratch, you have nothing to take with you. You have no brand asset, no personal brand asset, no like compounding value other than the 250K. So from my perspective, like, if you're playing a long game, you kind of want to do things that will compound so that even if you fail, you can like port over that value, that compounded value, to something else. So that's always why I've been staying away from these kind of like trends and fads. But I'm curious to get your take on this, because I haven't been like active on the internet for long enough to have like seen, maybe I got real active like 3 years ago. I haven't seen the like cycles for the last 10 years and how each of these works. So does that resonate with you in terms of like, you stay away from these games because you're trying to build like a long-term compounding value play? Or how do you think about this?
Yeah, I mean, I think the latter, building the long-term compounding play, like playing in decades, is always the way to do it. Like, there is a lot of quick money to be made, but generally there is a bit of a dead end in all of these. Yeah, I mean, I was kind of part of a cycle. Again, this was like 2014 when I started building apps, and I really took advantage of, there was, first of all, I was like one of the first ever, I would say, like pioneers in like influencer marketing. I wish I leaned into it a million times more at the time, but I remember like one of my first apps, it was called PicLab. This is the one that was the most downloaded photo editor on planet Earth in 2015. And it did crazy money. I was one of those guys making 150, 200 grand a month. And this was all on in-app purchases. We had 99 cent like sticker pack, $1.99 upgrade, $2.99 to remove the watermark. If, and again, man, timing is everything. If subscriptions were a thing back then, and like we went subscription on these apps, like I may have been like set for life. That's how crazy it was. The download numbers were like unreal. Like, and at the time I didn't realize what I had. And I was one of those dudes. I went out and bought an Audi R8 and I was like flying first class everywhere, penthouse, everything. But I was doing it to get girls. Like, honestly,
yeah,
there was no such, but like the amount of affinity, like I would get comments, I want to be just like you, da, da, da. If I, if the internet was the internet today, I could have gone and like sold a course on like product design development, blah, 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 and just made dumb money. And like, but I didn't. I didn't really know what I was doing. I was just trying to get like girls, whatever. And all of that was such a great learning experience. I don't regret anything because like those are the craziest like 4 years of my life. But like, I wish at the time, instead of like going out and spending money like a like an idiot, I reinvested into the company and like hired more and like built more apps. But it wasn't my, like I spent like 6 years in a basement making no money. And then now I know why athletes always go broke. Cause you're like, you come from nothing, then you get something and you're like, oh, this is just how it's going to be forever.
Yeah.
This is it. And so they go out and they spend money like an idiot and all of a sudden the pay goes down. And so that's what happened. Like as the, so let me reverse, the magic sauce was I would go to these influencers at the time. Like I'll give one example. There was a girl named Negan Mirsahelli, who was like one of the biggest fashion influencers in the world today. I think I told this story before, but I went up to her. She had like a 1.5 million followers, which at that time would be like 20 million a day. And I was like, hey, how much would it cost for you to promote my app to your followers? And she's like, I don't know, would like $200 be okay?
Oh my God.
I was like, what? And then I would just rinse and repeat. And I was going to these kids running theme pages at the time, which is funny because they're reemerging. Like as an example, there was a page at the time called Best Scenes and they would post like the best movie scenes. 1 million followers, which again, like today is unheard of too. And the algorithm was differently. So you'd post ads and everybody would see it. And they would be like, how does $12 sound? Like literally these were the numbers being thrown out. So I was so getting crazy installs, I shit you not, like less than a penny per install, probably a fraction of a penny. And so it was just like this flywheel that I took advantage of, but fast forward 3, 4, 5 years, it was no longer working because everybody jumped into it and it matured as an industry. And so I think this is kind of what happens with every trend. So if you're smart, you're in it for the long term and you're actually trying to build enterprise value, you're trying to compound value over time and you're playing a decades long game. At the time I didn't. So like, I'm not mad at these kids buying Lambos because the truth is, unfortunately, the way that our society works, they're going to sell 1,000 times more of their pyramid course, right? Because it's like that scene in Wolf of Wall Street where DiCaprio was like, I need them to want to live like me, right? And so these kids see the Lambo and they say, oh shit, I'm doing that. And so he's going to sell like literally, he's going to get that Lambo paid for like overnight just off the course sales. I get it. But eventually that's going to fizzle out. Like even I think micro-education in itself, and we've always talked about courses, but I think every single creator on the planet is going to go this route and is going to make it much more competitive. Again, diminishing returns and like another wave will start. And so I like trends. I only like them if you're like in front of the wave, if you're really, really riding the wave and not lagging behind. And you have to understand that eventually that wave will crash to shore and you know, you got to play that long-term game. And so I can never hate on a kid buying a Lambo. But I would like to mentor them in a way and say, hey, listen, this will fizzle faster than you could ever imagine. Like you got to be playing the long-term game here. Make sure you're compounding and investing wisely, you know, learn from my mistakes. That's what I would say.
I love this thread. So like if someone's listening to this right now, they're probably thinking, they're like, please Callaway, ask him this next question. So I'm going to tee it up for you. So basically like most people have either never played the game and want to, or they're in like their first season of playing and they're still trying to learn. And that's, I would say that's me, right? Like I'm still trying to learn like pattern recognition to understand like what works, what doesn't. Oh, made that mistake. Here's what whatever. You've been doing it for long enough where you've seen cycles you just described, like you had something working. Probably you were like ahead of your time, didn't realize it because there was no like playbook to look at. Profited a lot, made some mistakes, looped back around, did whatever, multiple times you've probably done this. So I think someone listening is probably like, wow, he's a wealth of knowledge. What is he doing now? Like based on everything he's learned and experimented with and won and lost, how is he bundling that into like the strategy going forward? And we've talked a little bit about how we think about content, but I think it's easy to get like lose the forest through the trees of like the content play is pretty in the weeds the way we talk about it. If you want to, if you don't feel like it's too repetitive, talk through like based on those learnings and like the themes you took out, how are you approaching the next wave, the next 5 to 10? And I know we've talked about it before, but reiterating it with this lens, I think it'd be really helpful.
In a way, I'm a little bit like back, not in a bad way, but like back to square one where I'm doing it as a front facing now personality. Cause before nobody really knew, even my, I had an account called G that I grew to like 200,000. I'd put my name on that, Roberto Nixon. It was a personal account, but it was all quotes. It was like dope inspo shots. It wasn't a lot of this, and like here and there I would sprinkle in like my own content. But this is the first time around where I'm like, all right, you know what? Let me build a brand around my interests, my passions, my experience, etc. And I also think that everybody in the world could be doing this. Like literally, if you're in a 9-to-5 that you don't love, I really do think that you could take your experiences, expertise, passions, and love and turn them into an online business. And so that's kind of my idea now. And when I started, it was very much like, let me just build a distribution channel for SaaS. It was like, I was kind of done with like consumer creativity apps. Although now I'm like building one just for fun, just with old code bases reused. But I was like, let me try something else. So I got out of that, and it was actually Web3, the first thing. And so I did what I was good at, built like a faceless Instagram page. And then I quickly realized, okay, Web3 is not the new paradigm that it's been advertised to. It's going to be AI, probably mixed reality, just tracking the money, big tech, you know, $500 billion invested versus like 22 or something like that. I forget what the number is. And I was like, all right, let me build an AI platform. That was Aluna. We tried it out. It proved my thesis. It proved my thesis. We had 200,000 people join up on the wait list. 200,000 on that email. Yeah. And we still have, by the way. So when this next product launches in a couple months. But I couldn't believe it. And I was like, that all came from my content, short form content with the call to action. Or Twitter. Twitter was popping too at the time because I was reposting viral videos on Twitter, not even like my own shit necessarily. And I was like, okay, this like proves my thesis. And so now I'm thinking about it under three buckets. The product bucket, and I'd love for you to try Pulse. It's finally ready for alpha. Gonna invite like 10 people on it. But like that is kind of my main play. Like that's the one where I feel like, okay, this can compound over time. I think it's a great product serving creators. But so we'll see. And like I'm very transparent. I love to ship fast, fail fast, ship before it's perfect, before it's ready, try to gather some data, see what it was. Aluna was super hot, but we decided, wait a second, we're gonna be competing against Midjourney, against OpenAI, against Google. It's like, this is not a good long-term play. So we shifted towards like ideation research scripting. So like my thing is still software. That's why I'm creating content candidly. Also because I love it. I love the artistic challenge, but mostly I'm trying to build max trust and distribution to fire that bullet when Pulse launches. And I think it can be very profitable. Hopefully there's an exit. I don't know where that goes, etc. But then there's other buckets. The other one is like brand deals that are trickling in. I'll probably do like one or two a month but it's kind of easy. Like you've done a lot of like very lucrative brand deals. How long, like the Adobe one, how long did that take?
Yeah, you know, same like as it would have.
Exactly. And so it's like the bang for the buck for the time there is great. We're also flirting with community, micro-education, that stuff. That could be another bucket. I'm not enthused or super excited about it. So I have to take that into account.
Yeah.
But in general, I'm making content to build distribution and to build trust for products that I want to build over the next 5 to 10 years. That's how I'm looking at it.
Yeah. This is why I love it so much, the way you're approaching it, specifically on the product side, because I've been thinking a lot about like, what's the edge? Like what makes you one of one? I say that like 10 times a day, but like what makes you differentiated? You have the product building experience that most people don't have. So like in the Venn diagram of creators who talk about the stuff we talk about, you know, tech, AI, whatever, and like actually can build and ship products, have taste for products, very few. There's very few in that Venn diagram. If you take away the product thing and it's just like creators and talk about tech, there's a lot. So it's like, what is the differentiated like point of view that you have, or like lens that you have that's different? It's you've built products. I want that to be mine. I've never actually done that, but you've done it many times. And so to lean away from that is like to give up the secret advantage when I think you have it. So it's just a matter of time of like, and like, obviously I'm not in there day to day. Like it's frustrating to build products. It's like so much iteration, like things break, you have a hypothesis, you don't get the data, it costs too much, but like, it's only a matter of time. It could be your 10th product, your second product, whatever, from here, where you now have the distribution, you know who wants to buy stuff. It's just, what do you sell them that they want to buy? It's only a matter of time at this point. So I love that. Like from a world building strategy perspective, that makes perfect sense to me for you. I also would love to figure out a way to do products, because I think the other buckets that as we've talked about, like the brand deals are helpful to keep the bills down and like keep cash coming in, but like there's a cap on how much you probably can make per year. Colin and Samir are probably up against the ceiling of like what you could make from brand deals, and it's still a lot, 1 to 2 million, but they still have to work a lot to maintain the team. And then, like you said, the other buckets, interesting, but like, I think, I don't know, we said this a lot, but I think from a personal brand perspective, you only get to live once, and I don't want our personal brand to be bogged down by like the sandbags of the B2B creator stack. Whatever that is, I don't want that. So it could be lucrative, but it just doesn't feel like the brand I want to build if you only get to build one personal brand once, you know? So I mean, just to like summarize for people, I love that. And I wanted you to articulate it because you've been through the cycles. You now have tried the different business models. You've seen like, oh, you built Faceless Pages, you built your own page, you work with influencers, you've built products, you've built community, like you've tried Web3, you've tried so many things. So I think this is a great forum to like help package that.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because brand deals is one of these things that like the world's top celebrities are doing them left and right, you know? And so like I had a buddy named Gerard Adams. He's one of my neighbors here in North Carolina. And he was the co-founder of Elite Daily, and they sold that for $50 million. And like his brand was like super successful entrepreneur, exited entrepreneur. And then like, I remember he did like a Colgate brand deal or something. And somebody's like, yo, aren't you supposed to be this mad rich guy? Isn't this a bad look on your brand? And I thought about that and we talked about it. I was like, wait a second, every celebrity in the world, yeah, these billion, The Rock is out there doing brand deals left and right. It's like, why is it different amongst creators in a way? So I've thought about that a lot. And I think what the difference is the medium. So it is difficult as short form creators doing brand deals because, again, like it's not conducive to the medium or to the format. So on this podcast, once you get brand deals coming in, I'm not mad at doing two or three reads per episode.
If yeah,
it's
me a either.
2 hour long episode, that's the way it is. That's what's expected. It's like, are you mad at Friends or Seinfeld for running a commercial? No, it's the medium. It's conducive to it. Same as YouTube, every video can be sponsored and it's completely like, we get it, it's all right. But in short form, it's a lot different. If every video is a brand deal, it becomes a little repetitive and maybe dull. And so that is one of the drawbacks of short form versus long form, newsletter, podcast, et cetera. But yeah, I mean, I love brand deals, but I agree with you. Because of the medium, because of the format, which is short form, like I'm only trying to take like 2 max monthly.
Yeah.
Because there's not a lot of room for creativity. Like you can't really be like, hey guys, this short form video is sponsored by Squarespace. All right, let's get into it. On Instagram, people forget.
Yeah, they're gone.
It's over.
Yeah.
And so I think that's kind of what it is. But otherwise, I don't mind brand deals. And sometimes the brand can actually add credence, credibility, prestige, and reputation to your brand. Like if you go out there and work with a Nike, it's like, oh shit. Like, damn, you know, yeah. Like my boy Joel, who lives here in Charlotte, he's sponsored now by ASRV. And that's he's sick. Like, I'm doing a bunch of ASRV content, but it's actually a good, like most people follow me because they're like, yo, how did you get signed to ASRV? It's a good look. So brand deals can be great or they can be destructive. It all depends on the brand, the method, the approach, et cetera.
I think a big piece of it is like, is the brand deal the totality of the content or a piece? So it's like on a TV show, on Seinfeld, you get 28 minutes of show, you get 6 minutes of ads. That's like a fair split. But on a 30-minute infomercial where the entire thing is an ad, you don't watch that because the totality of the piece is a commercial. Short form, like you said, it has to be the totality because of the medium. But like YouTube podcasts, you're just getting like a small sliver of ads for like the value. And that's why I think it's tough. But I totally agree with the second point you said, which is like, it's the same way where when I think about ads. I don't hate ads. I hate bad ads. I love good ads that are targeted to me, that's showing me stuff that I've never seen before, because in a way, good ads are just content curated for me. It just so happens that there's like a direct line to the product.
So that.
I think of it the same way with like brand deals. Like I want to tell my friends about cool shit I use. I do that already. It's just the deals I'm getting are not the things I would organically tell them. And once they are, it's beautiful. It's more of a collaboration or a partnership than a deal, you know? So I do think, I never want to stop doing brand partnerships because I think it's really cool to have someone create something. They see it. They see you as a good ambassador for it and they pay you to promote it. To me, that's like a dream scenario. It's just, we're not big enough yet to have gotten every one of those to be like the brands that we would pay, you know, we'd stand in line for, but it will get there.
And in due time, man, I mean, look at Marques Brownlee. That's something we could talk about. You wrote it on, you made a piece of content about it. It's on your newsletter. Where I think we both are in agreement. This is kind of like the model for creators, but Marques Brownlee has been doing this since 2012, 11, I think, like 13, 14 years.
Yeah.
He's been the biggest tech YouTuber now for like 7 years, and he waited until now. Like, this guy in 2015 could have done this, 2017. And so, like, it always comes back to, like, just patience. It's got to be the right time. Do it right. Be thoughtful about the approach. And so, yeah, I don't think we might not be big enough to work with the brands that, like, we'd love to work with on a long-term basis, but I think we get there.
We'll get there for sure.
And I want to talk to you about, like, your product. We were talking a little bit about it before, but I love this conversation. It's like, you've talked about your love for, like, fashion, product, physical, garments, texture, materials, how they come together, how they're designed, how they're packaged, shipped, et cetera. It's like, that I think is a huge play for you, but you were saying before the call, it's like, that is such a, like, you cannot rush that.
Yeah.
It is such a, and I agree, like, any great brand that we love today, whether it be Kith or otherwise, they started super scarcity, super status play. They probably didn't make any real money until 5, 6, 7 years down the line. So I want to talk about, I'd love for you to talk about, like, your experience, your thoughts, your approach. How are you feeling about, like, a physical product line? And where are you with that?
Yeah, that's like my overarching strategy is, like, use the content to break even financially and make and build as much trust as possible. And then all the eggs in the product basket at the right time, leak that out. And so that's like at the highest level, the strategy. I think the thing that's been frustrating about making a physical product is I'm the type of person that if I have an idea for something, I like to sit down, close the door, not leave, not eat, not sleep till it's done. Like, I just love that compressed, obsessive period. And with short form, the reason I like making the medium so much is because I can do that in a session. Like, one session for 3 or 4 hours, I can get it done, go from idea to out. And it feels really good to, like, complete the circle on an idea. But with physical products, brands, you just can't do that. Like, you can't compress all of the juice in one session. It just takes months. It takes years to, like, really build, like, even from a branding perspective, like, and I don't want to simplify branding to just, like, logo and aesthetic, but let's just talk about the visual aspect of a brand. If you're a designer yourself, that's awesome. But if you're not, you work with somebody, you get something back, you have to let it sit. Then you give them feedback. Then they iterate it. Then you make something with it. Then you put it out in the world. You see how it looks. You see how others respond. Then you iterate again. It's like that process really does take months, if not years, to even get to something that you're proud of. Then there's the 10-year cycle of, like, can I get others to care about it? So the way I'm thinking about the product stuff right now is we have a really unique advantage in that because we're making videos that go to 100,000 people every single day or every week, we can be the model for our stuff. So, like, I can wear a hat that I make or wear a hoodie that I make or hold a mug that I make or, like, put a light that I make in the background, and I can get hundreds of thousands of eyes on it without paying. And that's a huge advantage. And most brands don't have that. Most brands, they make something in a closed room and then they either pay influencers to try it or, like, they slowly roll it out. But it's like secret, secret, secret. And then once they open the aperture, they want everyone to hear about it. And it's hard to climb that hill. My hypothesis is that by, like, slowly teasing it, just like non-sellable, just by slowly teasing it from me, I can gauge whether people are interested in it and, like, get people interested in it over time once I dial in the design or whatever the value of the product is. For example, like the brick that I talked about, if I owned that product, that thing prints affiliate sales. Like, for those guys, I've already generated hundreds of affiliate sales for them and I use it all the time and I talk about it and it's right here. If I own that, I could just easily infuse that in my content over time. And so because of that, exactly. I think it's going to work. Or I know it'll work. It's just a matter of time of, like, I really have to be authentic with myself about the types of products that I actually like and the designs and use cases that I actually want, and then just not rush the aspect of rolling it out. And that gets to the scarcity that you were talking about of, like, I don't want everyone to have it. Eventually, I want anybody who resonates with it to be able to get it. But at the beginning, I don't want everyone to have it because that's, you know, it's simple, like supply and demand economics, like that you just want higher demand than you have supply. So I still have to think through, like, what does that look like? Do I just roll out a hat a month? Do I just make one hat, one hoodie and wear it a ton and, like, just see? Do I make two hats, two hoodies, wear them for a month and then do a surprise 24-hour drop that I've never announced and just, like, test? There's so many, like, interesting little wrinkles that I can do. So I haven't fully fleshed that out because we're still in the get the brand, get the visual to look compelling to me stage. And I'm going to do a lot of, like, sampling. I'm just starting with clothes because I think I think of clothes as a uniform. And I think in my videos, the thing that you see most other than like my face is the stuff I'm wearing, like hoodie hat. So I'm just going to start with hoodie hat.
There is no reason why you shouldn't have your own branded hoodie hat. Like yeah. already, like, yeah. you know, it's,
this, I've been wearing this hat every day.
I've been wearing this one recently too. And it's like, it's funny. Well, here's the thing. Like, I don't even really necessarily need a shout out like the dad supplier, though I wear these. This is just a brand that I called from called Dad Gang. But I got to say, the designs are uninspiring, not like as a knock to them. Like, it's just very, very basic. Where they went right is not even anything they did. Is they found the right supplier. So I'm not a fan of Dad Gang. Sorry, like, I'm not trying to hate on them or whatever. I'm just, like, there's no real affinity or allegiance to the brand. It's this supplier, which I've been trying to find. If we could find this supplier, dude, I was looking at Alibaba. Dude, they make the most comfortable, like, my favorite, like, fitting hats. And so that goes kind of to my other point where I believe is like a lot of fashion, or let's say like a lot of like modern fashion, like brand plays. I'm not talking about, you know, the Alexander Wangs, the Louis Vuittons, but let's talk about like the Represents or the Kiss or whatever of the world. It's like, they're probably going, actually they're at the point now where they probably have like their own designers, they're manufacturing their own garments. So maybe it's a bad example, but where they started or when most other brands started, a lot of them are going to like the same suppliers. So it's really like, it's not necessarily even a design or material or whatever play it is. It's really the ability to drive sentiment. It's the ability to like, cause we wear stuff, anybody wears anything and it's status, right? Like that's what humans kind of desire. It's like, why do we do anything? Why do we drive the car? Why do we act the way that we act? Like everything kind of goes back to this innate human desire, which is status. And some people try to like stay away from it or act like holier than thou, greater than thou, but everybody falls into this game. I don't care who you are. That's kind of what I believe, unless you're like a monk or whatever. There's always an element of status and how it affects you. And like that to me is the game when you're building a brand. And so in order to drive that status, I think that's why the scarcity is so important, to the point where like any website you go, Kith, Amelion, Dior, whatever it may be, they're always going to have like half of the shit sold out. Yeah, or like always. even if it's not, they could easily produce more. They're not dummies. They know the data. They have the customer data. They can kind of, but they do that on purpose. And that is to create sentiment. Wow, this is a highly coveted, a highly desired brand, and they must not be producing a lot. This is like, I got to get this. I'm getting on the wait list. I just gave my email. I'm going to buy it. Like it's all like this game.
It's all
and
game.
And it reminds me of like NFTs, honestly, where it was all a sentiment game. And so a lot of celebrities came in thinking like, oh, I have the most reach and distribution. Chris Brown, I'm going to drop an NFT, and it didn't sell, even though he has 18 million Instagram followers. It's because there was no like, it felt very, oh, he's just trying to, it's a cash grab.
Yeah.
And they weren't scarce. So he dropped like 20,000. And so like all of these, they're very similar to me. And, but yeah, when I think of fashion, not super high end fashion, but just like building a brand on the internet, like a dope brand, Represent, whatever it may be. It's like, how do you drive the most prestige and status and desirability to that brand? And I think that game is fascinating, bro. Like
it's sick.
I can't wait to see you play it, because I think it's, man, that's a fucking awesome game. That's a fun game.
Basically the North Star for me is, can I sell 10,000 hoodies of one design on a drop within 1 hour? If I can get to that, like that, I don't even know if that's like a lot or not, but I'm just putting that, it sounds a lot to me. I'm going to put that as a North Star metric. Yeah. So like how big would the brand have to be? How tightly coiled to the audience would it have to be able to sell 10,000 of one SKU on one drop in an hour? And if you reverse back from there all the way back, the psychology, which I find most fascinating, of like, how do you get there? Is kind of what you were talking about. It's basically like, A, you have to pick who's the who. So for me, it's going to be like world builders, entrepreneurs, creators, artists, makers, designers, everything in that bucket of like people that are making shit that they're proud of. That's what I want to build for, who I want to build for. And it's basically like, how do you get those people to give you $150 for a hoodie or whatever the price is? Like, let's just say $150. How do you get them to give you $150, or how do you get them to want to give you $150? It really boils down to like what you said. Will the signal of them wearing what you make project what they want to project into the world to whoever's seeing them? And so if the identity of the piece is like, I'm a world builder, I make cool shit, it has to project that. And so the way it projects that is if the sentiment, like you're saying, of the other people that wear it, project that to them. And it goes all the way up the pyramid until it's just me. So it's like, it starts with just me. People have to see me as that. And when I wear my own stuff or when I use my own stuff or like whatever the products are, they have to see who they want to be in me. It's kind of like what you were saying before about the like the TikTok or when you were going down the building the app and everybody wanted to be you. You could have made a clothing brand and it would have worked because everybody wanted to be you. And the everybody, it matters who it is. If that was the audience you were building for, it would have worked perfectly. So that when you reverse that all the way back, reverse engineer, it's like, I have to actually be that person. I can't fake it because if you fake it, it won't work. So fortunately, like I am building stuff. That's why we have this podcast. That's why I make content. I want to build. And then I have to be that person long enough where other people are like, damn, that guy, he's him. Like he is him. And it's like, what does he sell? He sells this hoodie. I like the way that hoodie looks on him. And I want to project that to other people that I have that energy. So that's like at a psychological base, like unit level, that's what you have to exude. And everything I've tried in the past, it wasn't me being me to sell a product for future me. It was like me thinking what others might want and then trying to like manufacture that inauthentic form. So yeah, it's a fascinating game. There's so many steps to go from where it is today, just a concept in my mind, to like 10,000 hoodies in 1 hour. But yeah, I mean, like
it really is, man. I mean, like ASRV is a brand that I think kind of like nailed it. And one of their secret sauce was like this dark and moody photography. And it just wanted to make you feel like, yo, you're just this guy in the zone, like checked out from the world in a dungeon, like grinding it out. And like, yeah, that's kind of like what ASRV sort of represented to me. And then it's like some of the dopest influencers, and they went with the guys making cinematic stuff. They didn't go with like your typical, whatever. It's like they recruited like a very specific type of like fitness influencer, and it just worked, man. It was all, yeah, it was like, you almost wanted to be part of this club.
It was real hard.
And the designs were like, the photography, videography and ASRV, like I got to applaud them. It's some of the best that I've ever seen. And so that comes into it too, man. Like the visuals, the every little tiny element that you include in your content.
Everything this matters.
This is tangential, but like one time when Yeezus came out, Kanye Yeezus, when that album came out, I didn't love it at first. Like, cause he was coming off like 808s and Heartbreak, My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, which was like, to me, like the magnum opus of Kanye. Like the, and then he went to like Yeezus and I didn't love it. But then I went to the concert. And the way that he crafted the visuals and he came out with like the mask and he was like on this floating stage and like a silhouetted spot, everything came full circle to me. And I realized how important like the pairing visuals are with like audio, pairing that with the rest of your story. And like all this came together. It was like, dude, it was like a magician weaving, like, I can't even describe it. He was like it all just came together so perfectly. I was like, okay, I understand why he is like the greatest artist of our generation.
Yeah.
Whatever. That's how I feel.
Have you heard that wild story about Kanye when, I think it was the Pablo, Life of Pablo album, when he was, so that stage was like, it was the floating stage, but it had all the lights coming down, like straight down, and he would have mosh pit below. So do you ever hear that story when he was being interviewed and they were like, it was the first time they were practicing, doing a rehearsal for that concert or whatever. And the stage manager, whoever it is, like walks in and Kanye is walking around the floor and he's in where the mosh pit would be looking up at the thing. And he's like, yo, give me your phone. And the guy's like, why? And he gives him his phone and he's like, cause I need to see how a selfie would look with this type of lighting. Cause that's the only thing people are going to be doing down here. And he's just like, he's just on another level of like the chess moves of like physical location and space and imagery and like everything, exactly what you're
correct
saying.
He's it just, all matters. And it's like, I feel like it's very instinctual to him. He just knows like as an artist, but that reminds me of like how you would approach a brand in today's day and age if you're playing in decades. And I love that as a goal, man, 10,000 hoodies sold in an hour. Now, like, I feel like that's the top echelon. That's, say, at $100 a drop. That's like $1 million drop. I know like Nelk Boys were able to do $1 million. They're able to do like $1 million drops.
Yeah.
I think Logan Paul with Maverick was able to do that, but that's top of the top, man. That's so elite. I love that. I love that as a goal because that is truly elite. Like that's Mr. Beast numbers.
Yeah. And when you think about like, so think about where I started, where like, even from a color perspective, like the wall was white. I had all the albums. My videos were all over the place. The caption colors were all over the place. The thumbnails were like random. Like it was very, basically zero direction. And like, you can see slowly I'm dialing it in where like, I'm really proud of this set. The set feels like moody and like, cause I'm going for this, like, not to be lame, but like this Batman, you know, bat cave style look, much like ASRV, like you're describing, where it's like the cinematic, moody, hard, like black and white. That's kind of like what my eye likes. So I'm dialing it in. Like now I've got the uniform that I wear, the set I've got, I'm starting to dial in like the caption consistency and the graphic treatment on the videos. It's like, I'm not there yet, but most of these brands are really like an iceberg. All the below the water stuff, nobody sees, because it's all like before the brand was popping, and it's just the founders or like the people that are really, really loyalists, like still dialing it in. But once it's dialed in, the iceberg emerges from the surface and everyone's like, damn, like look how sick all of that comes together. So I'm still figuring out, but I do think I'm going in the right direction of like closing down the variety of colors and designs and stuff, and like trying to learn that.
Yeah, man. I mean, and what came to mind, like a strategy piece, like say in a year, two, three, whenever like you're ready to drop something that like that's, you know, you're trying to sell 1,000 or 10,000 of or whatever. It's like, you can actually use that as part of the story. So the story you want to tell is like from where you started, like show your progression. And then like, you could be talking about a piece, like this is for everybody out there who refuses to give up or like something, you know, so you weave that into the story of the brand of the drop. And like by then, like the compounding effect should allow you to do that at scale. So like, I can all see it coming together and I love that. But yeah, man, yeah. After you nailed it too with Kanye, like the life of Pablo, like I'm very like inspired by him. The way that he approaches his craft is like how everybody can kind of take elements and pieces of that in how they approach their craft, whatever they may be building. So that's super interesting. I love that conversation.
Yeah, we could talk about that forever. I think a lot of people that listen who are creators is such an overused word, but like we'll say creators or like entrepreneurs that make content, a lot of people get to step one, which is like make the content. Like step zero is I want to do this someday. Step one is I'm making content. I'm growing. It's kind of working, kind of not. I don't really know. Step two is like applying the traffic or applying the trust to something. And I think a lot of people are at zero and they look at two and they're like, I want to apply the trust. I want to build a brand, whatever. And they overlook the difficulty of one. And then when they get into one, they're like, I wish I could just like learn more from people who are trying to transport one to two, like to try to understand how to use. So that's why I love this podcast, because we haven't figured out two yet. Like we're in one. We've had some traction with one. We've grown. We've started to learn things. We've like tried to distill the frameworks, but like we're very much still work in progress on like transferring it into how do you apply the attention? So I'm like every one of these creator friends that we have they try something, it works, it doesn't work. I love like thinking about it and trying to break down like what is working. Oren, for example, comes to mind. Like he, and if you don't follow him, it's at Oren Meets World on Instagram. He's positioned himself as basically like he calls himself the internet's creative director, which I think is a sick, sick title. And the way he looks at it is like, he's making content over here. He's trying to do YouTube. He has multiple paid newsletters, but really under the surface, this dude's just like a savage at branded marketing. Like he's building his own apparel company. He's building his own products company. He advises brands. He does all these joint ventures. It's like, if you look at him, it's really interesting the way he's applying one to two in that example, like using the content to trickle down. We're trying to do it a different way. There's so many other people that are doing it a different way. So I just love like studying these people to figure out what actually worked, because there really is no playbook.
There isn't. I mean, the thing about the creator landscape is that it changes so fast, like the platforms, what works, what interests an audience, et cetera, that like even when a playbook is sort of solidified, it can get outdated relatively quickly. Like the playbook that worked in 2017 will not work today for the most part. Like you can look at it at a super macro level, which is, okay, build community, build trust, sell a product. Sure. But like if you want to get more intricate and start getting into the nitty gritty and the fine details of these playbooks, that's always shifting and always changing. Which is why like one of my big things, if I'm talking to any creator, it's like just focus on getting a little bit better week after week for many, many years at a time. It's like, how do I kind of describe this? It's no matter what you're making, for the most part, there will come a time where audience fatigue will set in, interest will change, algorithms will change, platform behaviors, consumer behavior, et cetera, will change. And so it's like, it's very, very important to stay on top of this stuff, to always continue to experiment and to always continue getting better. So never like rest on your laurels. Never say, oh, I found a format, I'm good. Like, let me just do that forever. because I've been on the internet long enough now to see how like everything just kind of happens in waves. Nothing goes up and to the right forever. And so just continuing to upskill, I think, is always kind of the game, and really understanding also intimately human psychology. I think that goes such a long way. Like the understanding of human psychology and how that applies to the internet and platforms, platform culture, man, that is an unlock. And like that will equip you with what you need to be in the game, like forever, and not just being a flash in the pan. And so, yeah, man, there is no model that will forever work. And that's kind of what I love about this game. It's constant, consistent, and rapid evolution.
Yeah. The only thing transferable is the skills. And correct. I wish if I could go back to myself at 21, the one thing I'd say is like, yo, there is no fake for skills. If you don't have them, you're fucked. You have to build the skills. Like you can't shortcut the skills. You can't play a political game to try to like disguise that you have them and like limp. No, if you actually want to win, you have to have the skills. Only way to build the skills is actually
A Nepo baby. If you're a Nepo baby, yeah. You can get away with it. Yeah, otherwise, true. You got to build the skills.
That's a whole different game. Do you want to talk about the MKBHD Ridge thing? And we can wrap after that topic.
Yeah, let's do that. And this will be a shorter episode. That's on me. I got to take a daughter to an appointment. One day I want to talk about that too, man. Like dad life, what to like actually expect for any expectant father. It's a lot different than I thought. It's way more challenging than I thought. But also way more rewarding than I thought. But that's a different conversation.
You want to rip that for 5 minutes? Because I feel like that I'm going to be in that phase soon.
I could rip that really quick and then I could tee it up later. But one of my friends actually who had kids like young, and I got a bunch of buddies who had kids at like 18, 19, 20. That's a whole different game. Like I'm glad I didn't go that route. I've probably been a deadbeat. Like I was an idiot teenager. But anyways, like one of the quotes that I heard, you know, everybody was giving me advice, but like one of the quotes that I heard that was like the truest quote was like, listen, there's no way around it. This is going to make your life 10 times harder. Like that's it. But it's going to make your life 100 times more rewarding. And I definitely understand that to the point. It's like, if you've been following me or my work for a long time, before like July 23rd, let's say when my daughter was born, it was every day, all day. Like I was on all cylinders, like at least a video a day coming out, like from me, like Metaverse was going wild. Like I was everywhere. And now it's like, especially now I'm in a lull, but only because like baby's been sick, et cetera. But like now I haven't made a video in like 2 weeks and I don't even have any ideas. I have nothing written. I'm like, what am I like? It's been really, really challenging. And I'm probably getting 3 to 4 good hours a day to work, like maximum. And that's with like my wife being incredible and probably doing 75% of the work.
Yeah. And bad sleep probably.
Yeah, my sleep has not been good for sure. But like all this to say, I'm not like feeling bad about myself or anything because it's probably been the greatest 7 months of my life, like bar none. Like there are certain things about having a kid. Like the other day I came home from the gym or something and like she was at the door in her little like walker and she started like clapping and going crazy and shaking her head that I was coming through the door. Like that's probably the most happiness I've ever felt in my life and I'm not even bullshitting. Yeah, we'll talk about it like more in depth one day on like an episode. But anybody thinking about having kids, I kind of fell into this trap too where I was like, I want to make sure I'm set. I want to have a home. I want to have all this. Now, my only regret is like I didn't end up having them sooner. Like they're the greatest. But unless you're comfortable like hiring somebody to take care of your kid for you, which I don't recommend, like I wanted to be there every second of the way. It is that challenging. Like you will get worse sleep than you even think. And you'll have less time than you even think, but it's kind of irrelevant at that point. That makes sense. But yeah, that was my 3 minute synopsis, but we'll get into it deeper later one day. Yeah.
I'm pumped. I'm very pumped for it. I'm like, you can't really plan these things too specifically, but we're probably like 18 months away. So I think having the heads up and knowing it is good, but also like, I'm definitely ready for the next, chapter. And it's like, I've never met anybody who's like, it was a bad choice. Like every single person is like, it's the best thing you could ever do. Like it's not even close. And so yeah, it's going to be dope. I think to complete the human experience, you almost need that, right? I heard someone on a podcast say that.
Yeah. And it's like, in a way I was talking with my boy Mo, shout out Mo. But I was kind of having this conversation with him and I know this is going to sound like a little bit depressing maybe, but I was like, I feel very jaded. Like I'm not excited by a lot of things nowadays. Like I feel like I've seen it all, done it all. It's like, we had this conversation like not that long ago, but even everything on the internet is just a rehash, repetitive. It doesn't like really matter who you are. Everything's been done. It's like, and I kind of feel jaded to the point, even in our episode 6 or 7, wherever it was like travel is even, the mystique and magic of travel has even died for me in a way, because like the internet, we've seen it all done. Like, I don't want to like frame this in a depressing way, but the idea that I can like relive the world now through her eyes is very refreshing and like makes me very excited. Yeah. But yeah, I don't know, you know, like that, again, that might sound like dark or depressing, but that's just like how I feel right now. I do feel jaded to the point where I feel like I've seen it all and there isn't anything besides sometimes like great films. Anyways, that's a conversation for later. But yeah. I'm excited that you're even thinking about it, man, because it's magic. It's pure magic, bro.
Yeah,
incredible.
I'm pumped. I'm
stressful, of course, but
we can definitely hit that topic on a deeper level. I would love on a future pod if you like reflect on like the biggest like the things you had expectations about that were different and like what exceeded what didn't.
Totally.
That'd be sick on another pod. All right, the MKBHD Ridge thing. So I wrote about, like you said, I wrote about this. I made a video about this. I thought this was, well, the perfect pocket for like my type of video to make, like to break down the deal. But I actually thought it was like pretty underreported from whatever the media I was consuming. And I think it's a kind of a big,
same.
It's a big deal. So just to tee it up, basically MKBHD, Marques Brownlee, if you're in the tech world or on YouTube at all, you've definitely seen him. He's huge. He's been doing it for a long time.
I think he transcends tech now. I just feel like,
yeah,
everybody he's just like knows
a,
him
yeah,
now.
Yeah, he's a cultural icon.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. He's been doing this on YouTube, making tech videos for a long time. Like I want to say, or before 2010s, like I would say 2008 or something. He's been doing it for a long time. Interestingly, like we talked about, you see a lot of these creator paths, creator models. You got like the Logan Paul, Nelk, Beast, Emma Chamberlain have all taken the, I want to own a physical product brand. Most of them, ironically, drinks or snacks. And like they use their content to funnel it. They have the content brand that kind of pays for everything. They have that consumer brand that's like worth hundreds of millions, et cetera. Those have all worked. A lot of people try that. It doesn't work. But Marques never did that. And I always looked at him as like, if there was a guy other than Peter McKinnon to make like everyday carry or like desk stuff for your office, if you're like a tech or entrepreneur type person, it would be him. It just feels like a perfect brand extension. And you saw like little things from him here and there. Like he had like the matte black everything. He would like custom, he'd do one of one drops occasionally where maybe there's like a limited run of units, but never any like holistic brand play, never any intentional product strategy. And I was always wondering like why he didn't do that. And the news was that he is joining Ridge as the chief creative partner. We can talk about what that means. He's an equity investor. So I'm assuming he owns more than 5% of the company. He's also a board member. So he's like, these are my guys. I'm entrenching with Ridge. We're growing together from here on out. And if you don't know Ridge, I had heard of Ridge obviously, but like never really investigated that far. Ridge was founded like 10 years ago. They started as a wallet company. They make like these really minimalist metal wallets, mostly for guys. And then they've grown over the last 10 years or so into like an accessories everyday carry company. They have like key rings and backpacks and things like that, but the wallets are the main thing. And so when I saw the news, my initial reaction was like, what? Like, why would MKBHD? Because as soon as I saw it, I knew he was like attaching his wagon to Ridge kind of in a way, not exclusively, but more or less. So I was like, why would he partner with Ridge?
I think it is exclusive.
Oh, it is?
I believe the deal is exclusive. Yeah. Yeah.
Like he can't make anything else with anyone else, you think?
I forget where I saw it. I saw it on Threads. I'm going to double check.
It's more or less exclusive, right?
I do believe it's exclusive in that line. It's not like he can't go and make more sneakers or, but yeah. I think in it, like he can't go and make another wallet or leather accessory or everyday carry product with anybody else. So in that sense, it's exclusive to the products that they're making Ridge.
Yeah. And he wouldn't want to because now he's an equity investor. So he wants Ridge to do as well as possible.
Right.
So incentives are definitely tied and aligned. And so when I saw this, I was like, my initial gut reaction was like, this makes no sense. Like he's way bigger than what Ridge is because Ridge relative to the category is like well known in the men's sphere, but like I would say the brand equity of Ridge is like a 5 out of 10. I don't think it's super, super, super exclusive in terms of like how valuable that brand IP is. But then, and we can talk about it. I want to hear your first reaction, but we can talk about like why we think this is an interesting deal.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when I first saw it, I think it said like a 4-year deal, $1 million deal, 250 grand. And I'm like, wow, MKBHD just got fleeced. Like,
oh, I didn't even see the numbers. Grand. What are the numbers?
I was like 250 grand to get MKBHD's audience and stamp of approval. Like, he's going to sell way more. Like, he just got fleeced. But then I realized, oh, wait a second. No, he's probably getting a decent chunk of equity. And I like how Ridge's CEO is positioning it. He says that, because I agree, like right now, I don't think Ridge is, I've heard of it over the last like 7 years, I think, on the internet here and there. I've never like been enticed to buy anything. Now with MKBHD on board, I'm sure they make a dope product. I'll cop something. But I like how he's positioning it. He says he wants to be the next Yeti, which is like a $4-5 billion brand now. I think maybe even more, which is ludicrous for selling like ice buckets or coolers, whatever they sell. But then I saw what Stanley did, and you covered this really dope in one of your videos. And that's all that Ridge is going to need, is to create one of their accessories or items to be like the status cult play. And I think with MKBHD on board, they can do it. And I think that equity play, like, obviously I don't think he cares about, he's at the point where 250 grand a year is just not going to move the needle for him. But that equity play is what could, and you see it all the time, people who have compounded and kept working on their audience, their brand, whatever, for 10, 15 years. And then they'll have 1 year, in year 12, 17, 23, whatever it is, where they make more money in that year than like every other year combined. And this is usually how it culminates. And I think for MKBHD, this could be that play if Ridge one day goes and sells for $2 or $3 billion, and then he makes, I don't know, $100-$200 million or whatever it may be. It's like, that's also a testament to what we always talk about when you play in decades with MKBHD, who I'm sure for the first 8 years had people parroting in his ear, make a product, you got to build a product line. Why don't we partner and we'll do this strategic mouse and keyboard line? Why don't you sell a course? Let's do it. And I think he kept building, compounding over time, and now he's going to get his big, and if it's not Ridge, it's going to be something else. Cause I think he can, even though it's exclusive to that, maybe he goes and sells a keyboard and mouse with Corsair or something. Like, I think he can rinse and repeat this model with several other brands.
So before we go into the deal itself, cause I have some thoughts on that. Just to recap MKBHD's like monetization, like what we think his monetization blueprint was. So he never did a course. He really never did product stuff.
Well, he did a master class, I believe.
Oh, did he? Okay.
Yeah.
Like a cohort based thing?
Make compelling videos that go viral. I think this is like 4 or 5 years ago, but he did it for masterclass. He didn't do it on his own. Like,
for masterclass. So he probably got paid a flat fee and then some like
correct. Correct. Maybe even got equity in masterclass. I don't know if he was as big then to warrant that, but he did do a masterclass thing. Yeah.
Cause it's fascinating to me. Like he hasn't really built a huge like course platform that he owns, like the way Ali Abdaal does. He didn't really ever do products other than like one-off drops. He's done brand deals along the way. So like he has 18 million subscribers, and I would say he's post-economic for all intents and purposes. And like really the only way he's monetized, I think, is brand deals and YouTube AdSense more or less. Dude, like unless he had other deals.
His following is cult. I've never seen engagement like Marques Brownlee. It is unreal, man. And how he's been able to do it. I think he's like one of the top five ever. Like, holy shit. Like his audience so is sick. Cult.
Yeah.
Like Marques is selling him a bag of air, $80. Fuck it.
Yeah.
Sold. It's a one of 200. Give it to me.
Sold. I love him so much. I'm just trying to understand like, well, I think it's really cool that this whole time, 18 years in or whatever, really he only monetized with the YouTube AdSense, which compounded for sure exponentially, like as he got big, and then brand deals along the way. And like you said, he did one-off things here and there. Masterclass might as well have been a brand deal. Like he did one-off things here and there, but now he's really cashing in, or he could cash in. And I think what's an interesting proxy to compare him to is Peter McKinnon. So Peter McKinnon is a third the size of Marques, which is crazy. Like that just shows you how big Marques is. Peter McKinnon, I think, has like 5-6 million subscribers. Marques is 18 million. But Peter McKinnon, along the way, he did do product collaborations that were definitely more than one-off, right? So he had like the Nomadic backpack that he did with Nomadic. He had the Polar Pro filters. He has like a jewelry collab with Clocks and Colors, I think it's called. He has like a coffee brand that this James Coffee that I go to every single day in San Diego, he has like a collaboration with them too. So what's interesting is like, we don't get to see the numbers and we don't know the books of these guys or like what worked and what didn't and how much effort went in. But like Peter McKinnon took the route of make sick content. Anytime a product collab makes sense around something he wanted to build, he was going to go find the right partner at the right time. He has his like Pete's Pirate Life umbrella, but I don't think he has like one holistic brand that they all fit under. Marques was like, make dope content, wait. And now this ridge thing could be the umbrella. So with that context, I want a few thoughts on the ridge deal too. I want to get from you. So like the ridge CEO is hilarious on Twitter. I don't know if you follow him, Sean Franks.
I just started following him based off the MKBHC yeah, news.
He's hilarious. But in August last year, he put out a tweet and was like, any creator that's willing to come in-house at Ridge, I'll pay you $1 million. He saw, like he knew that they needed some creator in-house. And I wonder if he just like cold DM Marquez and was like, yo, let's see if we can make something work. And what I said in my video, which Marquez actually commented that he's like nailed it, which is, was sick to like see him comment on my video. Yeah. That was so dope. Basically what I said was he probably tried to do this in-house the same way that Logan Paul didn't build Prime in-house, but like Mr. Beast Feastables went and found the best chocolate CPG people, brought them in-house and like grew the team in-house. I think Marquez probably tried to do that many times over the years and just realized that managing the team was too big of a distraction from the content. And so both suffered and he couldn't get the quality output in-house. So he was probably like, I need to find just like a savage manufacturing supply chain focused organization that really gets this, that maybe has flexibility around the design and like the brand identity that I can come in. So that's why I think Ridge is actually like a perfect partnership for him, because even if the Ridge brand he's not super psyched about, he could white label their manufacturing and spin some separate thing off that like sits under their company. He could also like infuse some interesting design identity into Ridge's product. I just think there's so much they can do. And I saw him tease, the first product is dropping February 29th. Like he just dropped a teaser video. He didn't show what it was, but I think it's going to be a mechanical keyboard of some kind.
Sick. It could become like the variable ND filter that all photographers use, the Peter McKinnon one. It could be like all gamers or whatever, PC enthusiasts will use like the MKBHD keyboard or whatever it is. I think that's dope. I encourage everybody to go to Marques Brownlee's YouTube page, click on videos, and then go to the oldest tab. Like there's so many lessons here. One is that he's been doing the same thing for 16 years now. Like he loves this stuff. Like he loves reviewing tech and talking about, like he's obsessed. Obsession. You got to be obsessed. And then you'll go through, granted, these are probably inflated from people going back and watching his old stuff, but like I'm scrolling and like every video is like 2-3K views for like, dude, I've just been scrolling for forever, for like hundreds of videos.
For years.
And so there's so many lessons in here, man. It's like, it's such a beautiful story to have seen like unfold. I've only been following him for maybe like 7 years, but like imagine you're a guy that been following him for 14 years. Like you're almost like proud of him without knowing him. But yeah, man, it's awesome to see this. I think everyone should do it. I think we'll wrap there, but I think that was a killer pod, man. That's crazy amount of value in like 70 minutes.
That was dope. If you're listening, thank you so much for listening. Make sure to subscribe. Check us out if you're audio only, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, everywhere. And we'll see you guys on the next one.
Yes, sir.
Peace.